Welcome to Mobility Planet, our podcast on sustainable and innovative urban mobility topics. I'm Bonnie Fenton, and I work at Ruprecht Consult, a consultancy based in Cologne, Germany, and we focus on sustainable urban mobility. We often look at the city or the regional level in planning, but we shouldn't forget that urban planning is about planning for people. So today, we want to dig a little deeper into what's happening at the neighborhood level. So on the streets of our cities where people live and work and play. And also important, what role can people play in shaping their neighborhoods and maybe even the whole city around them? And we'll do that through some examples from a European project called Sunrise, which has been focusing on neighborhoods and learning some really interesting lessons along the way. I've got two conversation partners today. One is Michael Kotzky, a planner from Gothenburg, and the other will be a familiar voice if you listen to our first episode on parking in the city. It's my colleague Ralph Brandt, who spent a lot of time in recent years looking at planning at the neighborhood level. Ralph, can I ask you to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Pleasure to be here today. My name is Ralph Brandt. I'm actually a colleague of Bonnie's working at Ruprecht Consult in Cologne. I'm leading a team there called People-Focused Mobility Solutions, and I was within the coordinating team of the Horizon 2020 project, Sunrise.
And Michael, what about you?
Yeah, Michael Kowalski, based in Gothenburg, Sweden, heading Kowalski & Partners, a consultancy in sustainable mobility. And we were also part of the Sunrise project.
And it's nice to have you both here. We're talking about neighborhoods. We're talking about sustainable urban mobility planning. I think I need to start with a basic question. Can somebody define for me what exactly a neighborhood is?
Who should start off? It's not that easy as it sounds, actually.
Okay, I was kind of wondering.
There's plenty of definitions, but you could say it's a relatively small geographical area where you can walk around that is somehow enclosed or has an own identity and is defined by the outside or the people within as some sort of entity they associate with, and where people know each other, where you can walk around, where you live.
Yeah, Ralph, do you want to add anything to that?
I can say the definition that we pursued within the Sunrise project, and what mattered most was really the sense of identity of people, kind of a subjective definition of a neighborhood.
Yeah, you could almost see it as your village within the city.
Which is interesting. I'm not sure if I was expecting a sort of an administrative definition, but it's interesting to know that it really comes down to how you feel about it. So this place that you feel attached to in some way as your neighborhood, which maybe kind of makes me, my next question, maybe it sort of starts to answer it a little bit, which is the idea of why is it important or why do you need to plan at the neighborhood level? And I know we talk about SUMP or Sustainable Urban Mobility Planning, which encourages thinking about an entire functional urban area. So I'm wondering, is there a conflict here between planning for the entire functional urban area, but then planning at the neighborhood level, which is what you talked about in the Sunrise project that you were working on? How do the two of those fit together?
I think actually the conflict is not really there, but it's just that in the SUMP definition of that you should consider the whole functional area, I think what's actually meant is that you should look at the different levels in the same principle as the concept of subsidiarity that you see. Don't forget to look at the whole picture, but also look at the different levels where decisions can be made and use the right level for the right problem.
Just a quick tip for listeners here. Sustainable Urban Mobility Planning, or SUMP, is an established planning process based on 8 principles, the first of which is that the entire functional area should be accounted for and included in the process. And this means including suburbs and surrounding areas in your planning, if they're a source of significant numbers of journeys. And I was wondering if your neighborhood focus contradicts this principle. But with subsidiarity, you sort of defined it after the fact. I think in the European Union context, they talk about decisions being made at the lowest possible level. So in this case, making that comparison, the neighborhood is the lowest possible level. I don't mean the lowest, but maybe the closest to the people or the closest to the ones who are affected by it, which makes a lot of sense, I think. Ralph, do you want to add anything to that?
I think the neighborhood level planning is, it's not currently spelled out or emphasized enough, I would say, in the existing SUMP, Sustainable Urban Mobility Planning Guidelines. What I think comes out of the Sunrise Project is that it's not a contradiction, but a complementarity position, I would say. Of course, the functional urban area, including the commuter catchment area and everything, that's extremely important for certain kinds of challenges, and certain kinds of decisions should and have to be made at that level. But then there's this nitty-gritty everyday life kind of phenomenon of people, which would then run risk to be overlooked. Details like the radius of a curve might be too narrow for cyclists. That would be completely overlooked at a citywide level. Or, you know, a zebra crossing might be faded, the paint of a zebra crossing. And it sometimes helps people to just tackle something at that super detailed level. And that would be just too detailed for a citywide attention. So you need to dive down and really engage and listen very carefully to the people, to their perception of problems, to their ideas of what could be done. And indeed, we think that is something that should complement the citywide approach.
I'd like to add there as well that if you only use a citywide approach, then you're neglecting that the city is not a homogeneous body. There is huge differences in mobility, in behavior, in economic sense, in socioeconomics within a city, and treating all neighborhoods exactly the same way is just not right, because not all neighborhoods have the same preconditions or have the same problems.
Just to illustrate that, and actually that's an example we're giving in a new document that Michael and I wrote, an SUMP topic guide on sustainable neighborhood mobility planning and this complementarity aspect. So there we tease out this phenomenon that Michael just mentioned, that neighborhoods, even within the same city, can be radically different. And a case we'd bring is during the COVID-19 pandemic, then the city of Cologne, where we're based, there were neighborhoods with an infection rate of per 100,000 inhabitants ranging from 50 to 540 in the same city. So, I mean, that tells us something, that just using one big brush to address the situations, the challenges, the needs, topographical, cultural conditions in the different neighborhoods with one broad brush, that's not good enough. We can do better.
I can even add a Gothenburg example that is more closely correlated to mobility, is that we have neighborhoods that have a car ownership rate of one car in five households, so 0.2 cars per household. And we have neighborhoods that have one car per household. So obviously, the situation in terms of mobility measures and mobility situation is very different. And using the same approach in these two opposing neighborhoods would be wrong.
It's interesting because you're talking about things that make so much sense, but at the same time, you don't really hear them approached or discussed in the idea of mobility planning. I'm wondering a little bit why that might be the case. And one of the answers I sort of have for myself, it kind of seems like this could be really time intensive. If you're assuming, I don't know how many neighborhoods per city, and you need to go into each one of them individually, is this possible? Is it worth it? Do you get better results? Three questions all in one. Who wants to take them?
Complexity is a pain, isn't it? But we can't deny that the reality of cities is complex, and you know, a one fits all solution just doesn't work.
I totally agree. Yes, it is. It requires a lot of time. It also requires resources for staff, for venues, for meeting places. If you want to make it attractive for people to actively participate, you need catering and childcare and all the rest of it. So yes, it takes time, it takes money. I would say it is worth it because it's the only way to do justice to the local specificities. But then again, I guess what we also saw in the Sunrise Project in a number of cases, working so thoroughly at the level of one neighborhood certainly help to understand patterns that are similar in other parts of the city. So it could almost be like a prototyping approach. You could maybe tackle a controversial issue in a co-creative, decentral, neighborhood-based approach in one neighborhood and kind of build up a citywide discourse around this from that point on, which has a positive effect for the whole city. So it's not necessarily, I think, that you need the same level of thoroughness in every single neighborhood in a city. And so there is some cross-learning that you can utilize, I think.
It sounds like there are certain criteria that you would have for selecting a neighborhood. And so I heard two from you that are quite contrasting. One, in that something is really unique and needs to be addressed on its own. And the other is that it can serve as a forerunner or an example for others. Can you give us any examples of this from your experience in the Sunrise Project of cities that have taken something forward sort of from one neighborhood and maybe expanding it somewhere else? Can you be concrete for us?
Yeah, one example is the city of Bremen, where the chosen neighborhood in the Sunrise Project had a severe parking issue with illegal parking, cluttered streets. Parking situation was so bad that pedestrians and people in wheelchairs couldn't use the sidewalks. But that in itself is not a unique problem for that neighborhood. Parking is an issue all over the city. It was an extreme case in that neighborhood, and it's a controversial issue. So that neighborhood was chosen to address it and discuss it thoroughly with the neighbor, with the residents, with the local stakeholders. The main goal is, of course, to find a solution for that neighborhood, but also to learn something that can be transferred to other neighborhoods throughout the city. So that's an example where you use a local specific problem that exists elsewhere as well, work with it locally, and then transfer that to other parts of the city.
Ralph, did you want to add?
Sure. I think another example that comes to mind is Jerusalem. The neighborhood they worked with within the Sunrise Project was called Baca. And the focus there, we started with identifying problems, and the main problem was the path mainly, that was the starting point for kids to this main school area. It was just unsafe for kids to walk there. And so out of this came the whole issue of walkability, and they built a children walkability ambassador program, and they created walkability maps. They upgraded path, like physically changed the infrastructure, introduced a bench, which they call the conversational bench, quite a nice thing. And so they gathered all this experience, and they were approached by neighboring neighborhoods, and they got into conversations, and like this other, the adjacent areas of the city, they said, this sounds interesting. Couldn't we do something similar? And indeed, now this idea, this walkability idea is spreading. There are similar initiatives forming in other parts of Jerusalem. They're even talking about a citywide walkability program, which literally was initiated through the Sunrise activities in Baca. There are even discussions about a nationwide walkability program. So, yes, I think that's a clear and good example of how things can spread that start very, very locally.
Super interesting. So it's not something that it really is, as you said earlier, something that affects people at the local level in their own neighborhoods, but it can easily transfer to other people in their own local neighborhoods. And this sort of going from one to the next to the next. What sounds really interesting in Jerusalem too is that clearly there was something visibly different here. They were making a real change that the neighboring neighborhoods looked over and said, hey, there's something good going on there. That sort of within the context of this work at the neighborhood level, they were making a real difference.
Well, I would say so. But just to stress something, an important point, replication is not kind of cookie cutter style, copy-paste approach. It's really more like inspiration, I would say, getting ideas to travel, but not kind of off-the-shelf solutions to travel. I think that's important to stress.
And another thing that's important to keep in mind is that the neighborhood approach is suitable if there is a tangible problem that is that the people within the neighborhood experience as a problem. So I don't think like global warming is suitable as a topic on a neighborhood level, whereas you know noise level on the street or dangerous way to schools, that's something that you can experience hands-on and you can change, you can feel a change if something happens in the neighborhood. So you have to choose a topic or a problem area that is tangible within the neighborhood and is considered a problem.
It's a really interesting point and important thing. I was talking to a colleague just this morning about this too, that you have to recognize that something is a problem before you actually start looking for an answer to it or a solution for it, I guess. So you talked about parking is one of them, safety for kids, noise. Can you give some other examples? I'm just thinking if anybody's listening to this and thinking what might be an effective or valuable sort of, or what kind of problems might they want to deal with at a neighborhood level? Can you give us a couple more examples, either from within the Sunrise Project or just what you're aware of, the problems that you might want to deal with at this level?
Well, definitely the whole topic of safety and security within sort of for pedestrians, for cyclists, for children, that is something that people experience hands-on and where local changes can really make a difference. So that is certainly one. Another one is noise. It's also something, traffic noise is something that people can experience directly. And if there's a change, they also feel an immediate improvement.
The point of the immediacy of this, that it really is something that you can see and feel in your own neighborhood. And that in the neighborhood in Bremen, for example, that the cars are no longer parked on the pavements and people can walk there with their kids or with their strollers or with people in wheelchairs, that they've created a visible improvement there.
Yeah, there's a kind of a short-term feedback. I mean, actually, the Sunrise City South End is another example where you had a part of a street that was kind of boring and basically unsafe, and that was revigorated with, you know, in discussions with neighbors, with locals, with local businesses. There were tree plantations, there were changes in the street pattern and parking. So to make it a more pleasant local square, that's another example of immediate feedback.
Almost anecdotal, but I think it's actually a telling example from Neorizia, a neighborhood near Thessaloniki in Greece, about the perception of problems. It turns out, through what we called in Sunrise a co-identification of the problems, that some kids are afraid to walk to school because of stray dogs. This is a phenomenon not typically on the radar of mobility planners, but it's important. It matters to people. And just coming back to the necessity, the need to really give attention to such local, decentral details. You have to understand that if you want to come up with effective solutions.
I think the two points of this, the identification of the problems at the local level or recognizing that there is a problem that needs to be addressed. And then I know you talked about the co-creation or the aspect of working together on this, but also just the fact that the local people, like they're the experts. They know their neighborhoods. They know what the problems are, and they probably can come up with some good solutions to this as well. Being, as I said, the local experts, or they know their place better than anybody else does.
I mean, if you have a speeding problem, if you really want to know on what section of the street, on what corner there's a lot of speeding, you have to ask locally. There's another example that we didn't actually mention, that sometimes you need the local involvement to find a solution and to execute it. Like let's say the example from Thessaloniki again, that let's say Safeway to school, it's a proven example of walking school buses. But to initiate that, you need the cooperation of the local residents, because someone has to walk with the kids. It cannot just be commanded from top down.
So the buy-in definitely needs to be there. You have to think that it's a good thing before you want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
That's what we called in Sunrise terminology, co-implementation.
I think just the involvement or just sort of that feeling ownership of the whole thing. And I could imagine it being empowering, I think, when you can be a part of a process that's happening at your local level and then actually see something change for the better through the work that you've done. Because I imagine there's quite a bit of, it could be fairly time intensive also for the people that are involved, for the neighbors living there. You put some effort into this, you give your time, you give your ideas. There's a certain expectation that something is going to be improved. Otherwise, you maybe feel like you've wasted your time and somebody's sort of playing games with you.
Yeah, that's a very important point, really. Yeah. Basically, it has to be something that engages you, because otherwise people will not spend their time. And there has to be the possibility for an improvement. And of course, ideally, it should actually happen. Otherwise, people spend their time and nothing happened and they will not do it again.
And that's why we stress the importance of real explicit commitment by the city or the administrative side of things. Something we suggested in the Sunrise neighborhoods, to really articulate in writing an implementation or participation promise, to really tell people who might consider, should I get engaged? Should I donate my time to this process, to say, actually, we mean it. We do want to take your input seriously. And maybe even we have a budget allocated for some implementation. We don't know yet what comes out of this process, but we mean it and we will do something that responds to the needs that you tell us.
Could you say anything about maybe the relationship between the city, and I'll put that sort of in quotation marks, the city and the people living there? Because I think you, as maybe a local citizen, you might have a bit of a sense of powerlessness, or, you know, all those people out there, what do they know about me, or do they even care about me? Were there any relationships that changed, or sort of different perceptions of one another from the, say, the neighborhood level to the administration at the city? Is there anything you can talk about there? Does it make a difference?
I think that's a key ingredient of success, to enable an encounter among human beings and not among the city or the administration, the department of so-and-so, but Mr. such-and-such coming out in the rain, getting wet together with the people, or having a coffee with local residents and encountering them, each other as human beings. As I said, I think that's super important for trust building. Trust is a super important element of this whole process, and also something you can't rush. You can't rush trust building, which again is another reason why it takes time.
And there again, it is fundamental then also to deliver on the promise of what's been developed. Because if you use people's time and in the end there's nothing coming out of it, you might actually be in a worse situation than before, because you didn't solve the problem and you lost the people's trust. It's paramount that you actually deliver on what's being discussed and developed. And then I think you really change the view and the interaction between, let's say, the citizens, the residents, and the city administration, so that there's much more open dialogue. It's a real possibility, but there's a risk that you burn it. And I mean, in the end, I mean, it's almost a political question. If you look at it, you'll have to hand down some power. Otherwise, it's not actually a co-creation process. I mean, if you as a city administration aren't ready to actually give away a little power and open up for suggestions and ideas that might not be yours, then it's not actually a co-creation process. Then it's maybe just a hearing.
That it's definitely a two-way relationship in order that you can make things happen.
And to be able to succeed in orderly fashion, you also have to be very clear from the beginning what is possible and what not. I mean, there has to be, let's say, a framework of what's legally possible, what's financially possible, what fits within the framework of the goals of the city. I mean, theoretically, you could locally come up with something that is going against the goals of the city or the goals of the SUMP. And that has to be very clear that, sorry, we can't do that.
Interesting. So don't make any promises that you can't keep. Be honest about what's possible.
And the key term there that we stress several times also in this SUMP topic guide that I mentioned is alignment. It's absolutely important to achieve a certain degree of alignment between the local activities, the local goals, the local even success criteria indicators with the citywide. And this, it comes back to this complementarity between SUMP, i.e. citywide efforts, and local neighborhood-based efforts. And we try to provide some tips how this can be done.
Alignment makes sense as a term there, that you can see that it needs to fit together. So it's not one or the other, but both are happening and they need to be running sort of in parallel.
Yeah. Or you could see that the SUMP gives the rough direction of where the city wants to go. But on the neighborhood level, the actual path, how to get there in that specific context can be discussed and defined.
Set and defined individually. I have one more question. I'm just wondering, this is all very local. I can imagine it can also get personal for some people because you're working with your neighbors. Maybe you don't necessarily agree with them. What if people don't like what you come up with in the end? I'm sure some people will, but what if some people don't? Do you end up with little wars going on within the neighborhood because maybe you've uncovered an issue and it's pretty personal, that's outside your front door? Is there anything going on like that? And how do you deal with that?
I think it depends on the nature of the issue, first of all. If it's just a matter of improving a situation that harms no one, I guess everyone will be happy. But especially if it's about redistributing privileges, in particular space, then of course you have what might be called winners and losers. And yes, in such situations, controversies are inevitable. But I would say that at least my understanding of democracy, it's at least important to talk about these issues, articulate them, bring them into the open so they can be discussed in the democratic forum, and maybe also understand the rationales of different people and see that, if we go back to the example that Michael used before, a wheelchair user, I mean, there aren't that many wheelchair users. There are certainly more car drivers than wheelchair users. But the weight of the needs of a wheelchair user to use the pavement, I mean, let's have a conversation about it. Is it more important than a car driver having to walk 100 meters to a central parking lot instead of parking the car in front of the house?
And there, the neighborhood level can actually help to create an understanding that sharing a neighborhood, sharing space, sharing a traffic system is always a compromise. You could extend it. You can have the same discussion on taxes. I mean, no one actually likes to pay taxes. But if you know what you get for it, it's easier to accept.
You brought us a lot of really interesting points. We think we're talking about planning and developing cities and mobility. But a lot of this comes back to very human aspects of trust and relationships and sort of, I would even say, a generosity of spirit. If you think my needs maybe are not as important as somebody else's needs in this case. And what I find really interesting from what you're saying here is that there probably will be some conflicts, but at least as I'm understanding this, if you develop the relationships and you have the trust to people, probably you'll be better off by having those discussions about the conflicting interests rather than trying to avoid them, which I think is what often cities would do. You think, oh, that's not going to be a nice conversation. I'm just going to avoid it. But from what I'm hearing from you is working at the neighborhood level, building relationships, building trust over time, it's possible to have some of those difficult decisions or discussions over conflicting interests and maybe coming to improvements that you wouldn't get to otherwise because you were afraid to go into it. So it sounds like it's a call to courage to have those discussions.
Very nicely put, yes.
Yeah, I would definitely support that. I think the neighborhood level is really suitable for controversial issues, but you have to be courageous to bring them on the table and say, you know, let's hear everybody out. Let's discuss why is it controversial, what are the different views, and what compromise can be found.
If I may add, you said the alternative might be to avoid conflict. Another alternative could be just to let power and influence decide, to just push through it. The best organized groups will decide, they will have their say because they have more contacts, more money, whatever. Neither avoidance nor power solutions, in inverted commas, are, I think, are good in a democratic society.
And at that local level, people have maybe the best chance of being heard, their individual voices among their neighbors. Okay, I think we need to wrap now, but I would like to say thank you so much for the conversation. It's super interesting. I think it's maybe less technical and more human than people might have expected out of this discussion, but there's definitely a lot to be learned from it. For instance, how important it is that the issues that are addressed are relevant to the citizens' everyday lives, and that it be understood by everybody involved that something concrete will actually come out of all the effort and time that's put into it. And also how important the trust is between planners and residents if we want to make any real progress. I'd like to say thank you one more time to my colleague, Ralph Brandt, and thank you also to Michael Kotsky in Gothenburg, Sweden. Both of them have been working on the Sunrise Project, the EU project that's wrapping up after 4 years. And thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did, and hope that you'll tune in and listen again next month to our next episode. If you like, you can find more information about the Sunrise Project and our work in general in the show notes. And of course, please feel free to drop us a line or a comment on LinkedIn or Twitter. Thanks very much.